Our guest on the Global Observatory today is Tanasi Kambanis, a journalist specializing in the Middle East and American foreign policy, a fellow at the Century Foundation, and the author of the book, A Privilege to Die, Inside Hezbollah's Legions and Their Endless War Against Israel. Tanasi, thank you for speaking with us today. Tanasi, at least 17 Lebanese soldiers were killed in clashes with Sunni militants in the Lebanese city of Sidon this past week, as the Syrian civil war continues to spill over into Lebanon and the violence appears to be intensifying there. What is the atmosphere on the ground in Beirut?
Well, Beirut itself has been mostly untouched by the increased tensions, but the problem we've begun to have more and more of in Lebanon so far has been between hardcore Sunnis in Lebanon and supporters of Hezbollah. And we've seen it for the most part in the cities of Saida and Tripoli, and that's because those are places that have a heavy concentration of Sunnis, and in particular of Salafi Sunnis. So when there's problems in Lebanon, they tend to manifest themselves wherever there's a fault line, wherever they're overlapping sectarian populations. There's also a couple of Beirut neighborhoods that we can expect in the coming months to see flare-ups in. And these are all reflections of a deeper insecurity that's sort of ripening inside Lebanon as the Syrian civil war ages into its third year. We have groups here, particularly supporters of Hezbollah on one side and the supporters of the Sunni insurgents on the other, who are increasingly feeling insecure and feeling threatened here inside Lebanon about their prospects here as a result of the violence there.
Hezbollah fighters were involved in the clashes against their fellow Lebanese, as we know. And the organization has also now explicitly committed itself to preserving Assad's rule in Syria. Until this point, Hezbollah's identity was defined largely by its resistance against Israel. So do you think, are we seeing a sort of paradigm shift for Hezbollah toward perhaps a more global Shia defense organization of sorts?
Well, first of all, we have to bear in mind that no matter how some outsiders perceive it, the Assad regime is not a sectarian regime. He's an Alawite, and he has most of the Alawite support, but he rules with a coalition that transcends sects. Assad still possesses significant support from some of Syria's Sunnis. So even though there's a lot of sectarian overtones to the conflict, and even though we can say the rebellion is mostly Sunni, it's not so simply divided. Another key thing to remember is that Hezbollah, even today, still possesses deep and unwavering support from the largest Christian political party in Lebanon and community members of all the other sects in Lebanon. With those sort of caveats in mind, you know, I think you raise an important question, which is, how does it affect Hezbollah's identity and core support now that it has entered into an Arab civil war on the side of one party? So here is the Lebanese Party of God, whose raison d'etre is to fight Israel, suddenly turning its firepower on a group of Islamist Sunni Arabs. So essentially, their Sunni counterparts, their brethren, are being put in the same enemies box as the Jewish state. And it's unclear to me whether that hurts them at all with their support base. I think it does hurt them in terms of the long-term game inside Lebanon. Their diehard supporters are on board with this mission because they're as concerned about jihadists as they are about the Israelis. But the wider Lebanese body politic has a lot of trouble swallowing this. You know, they can all get on board with the war against Israel, the common enemy, but, you know, at least half of this country is supporting the other side in the Syrian civil war. And I think it does hurt Hezbollah's long-term prospects for remaining the undisputed power broker and the dominant power in this pluralistic state.
And what about in the region? How has Hezbollah's involvement in Syria and this shift in identity affected its legitimacy in the Middle East?
Well, this is something we've talked about a lot. And in fact, undeniably, Hezbollah and its leader, Hassan Nasrallah, have lost popularity in the region as a result of their position on the Syrian civil war. They've seemed like hypocrites. They've seemed sectarian. They supported all the Arab uprisings except for the one in Syria. So that has made them disliked. I'm not sure it costs them anything because, you know, the great wave of popularity they enjoyed after 2006 didn't bring them money or weapons or political support. It just brought them high numbers in polls. It didn't really matter that Sunni Arab Egyptians or Christians in Palestine were cheering for Hassan Nasrallah, it made no difference to their strategic or practical existence. So now today, they've got a lot of people who hate them, who a few years ago liked them, but they're still being underwritten, in fact, by the Iranians, indirectly by the Russians, and by Syria. So their actual position for now is uncompromised by this position. I think in the long run, they do run a danger because, for example, Hamas has broken with the so-called axis of resistance that included Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, and until last year, Hamas. And so I think they will suffer some medium-term costs. But so far, this is a temporary realignment. And one other thing that I think is really important, not just for looking at Hezbollah and this conflict, but looking at all the parties, is that we have seen in the last 30 years, at least, repeated instances where groups have fought each other, murderously killed, tortured one another's members, invoked sectarian identity, really taken a conflict to a gruesome level, and then have been able, shortly after brokering a truce, to be political allies. And so we've seen the unforgivable not forgiven, but overcome in the interest of a renewed common interest. And I think it's important when we look at Hezbollah's role and we look at the potential for reconciliation in Syria that we remember that a lot of these vituperative and rightfully aggrieved parties in the conflict may well find themselves able to do a deal and operate together in a relatively short period of time.
Many think that the Syrian civil war could ultimately lead to the breakup of that country. And right now, there's a lot of skepticism regarding the resolution of the conflict anytime soon. Do you think Lebanon's recovery after its long civil war, mixed as it was, could that provide some sort of model for Syria?
That's a grim model, right? The Lebanese solution suggests that, you know, even after the worst communal atrocities, some kind of accommodation is possible. It's terribly dysfunctional, the model of muddling through. It's a model of failure, but not catastrophe. So, yes, it is one blueprint forward, but I think, you know, there's other possibilities as well. There are people who argue, and I'm sympathetic to their argument, the national identity of Syrians is actually quite strong, and that the cohesion of people who think of themselves as Syrians is quite deep, even between the communities that are warring with each other today. And the other example we should look at for parallels is Iraq, which has devolved some amount of federal authority since the American invasion a decade ago, but it has not split in three, as many people predicted. I mean, even the functional autonomy of the Kurdish region has not been extended to an official independence bid. And there are lots of reasons for that, and some of them are practical and have to do with sharing of resources and the extent of federal power. Some of it has to do with the real enduring power of national identity. You know, even if many of these borders were invented by Sykes-Picot about a century ago, they've become real in the minds of many of these citizens. And I think it's all too easy to predict the demise of these states, and one should be careful and at least weigh heavily, as I do, the possibility that these states remain intact and that Syria remains Syria, a single unitary state with one government, even in the eventuality in which there's some kind of de facto autonomy between different zones of the country.
Thank you so much, Tanati. That was very interesting. Thanks for sharing your insights with us today.
It was a pleasure to talk to you.